right. Friday, chilly Friday. Coming up on a really super chilly weekend. So let's enjoy it while we can. It's still a happy hour one way or the other. Triple happy hour if you count. Friday, 5 p.m., then time for American Air Radio. 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD is the station. I'm Tom Ryan, and my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, who every now and then grabs a microphone, not often. Usually she's behind the board working to make the show sound good. Now, of course, on Fridays, if you're a regular listener, you know that we do a series called How Music Changed. We've got a bunch of topics that we try to go really deep, that if you put it all together, it would eventually represent some sort of like complete history of recorded music. It's a highly ambitious idea. We both know it. And I do think that I'm going to have to see if there's a way for me to make a deal with God so that I can live to be about 140 years old to finish this series. But we have done about 50 some odd topics out of the 250 already. And some of them, of course, go all the way back to the beginning of recorded music. Those ones are behind us. We've done, the way we have it set up is very kind of simple. It's sort of chronological in terms of like when the artist was at their, began to become well known. So the first 250 I call the early shows. The second 250 I can call the contemporary shows. Now the midpoint for 251 had us landing somewhere in the early 60s. So it worked out pretty well so that we can go really old time, like the beginning of recorded music, and then move up to 1963. And pretty soon, you know, we're bouncing back from like from the Beatles back to the beginning of recorded music and then maybe to the Rolling Stones, like that, back and forth. And we are now on one of the old topics, the pre rock and roll era list of how music changed. And the series that we're on, we just started last week. It's dedicated to the American Anthology of Folk Music. And we've explained the incredible relevance of the music in this series in part one. But then for that show, that was only the beginning of what is in store. Part B continues the series of songs that are referred to as ballads that consist mostly from recordings from Appalachia. Now, some of these songs have roots that go back as far as 500 years. Some of them even more than that. You can trace some of these things, songs back to the 1300s. It's the deep history buried in these recordings that helped to develop a new kind of folk music after the release of this series. So it's impossible to deny the significance of these songs. And the relevance is rather interesting because, well, when this original grouping of recordings first hit the market, the year was 1952, and there weren't that many people interested in hearing songs that were already 30 years old at that point in time. Or 52, it would have been only 20 years old. It doesn't sound like that long, right? But wow, that was it. It was 20 years old, and it was as forgotten as like old as an old newspaper or something. And everybody being, America being what it was in the 1950s, people were looking forward. But there was this one guy whose name was Harry Smith, who was a big record collector. And he was a bit unusual. And his records were his favorite things, and I totally relate to that. So what he was decided to do was that he would compile what he considered to be the most important aspects of his record collection and dig up as much information as he possibly could regarding the history of the songs and have them released on an album, which he did manage to get done on Smith, well, on Folkways Records. The thing is, it was technically illegal to do that because he didn't have any of the rights to the songs. And so the fact that Folkways agreed to do this for him was amazing, really, if not outrageous. But the thing, again, at that point in time, almost nobody was thinking about looking back everything was like the future. Where are we going? Not where have we been? So even the people who had the rights to these songs, and some of them were very, very big labels, like Columbia, Decca, who probably had, I know Columbia is definitely responsible for some of the recordings. They didn't bother to sue. They didn't think that they were going to lose money or make money because it didn't really sell in the first place. But waiting about 5 or 6 years, the word of mouth began to get around about how amazing the work of Harry Smith really was, how much thought went into his compiling of these songs, and how he basically even put them in an order that was fascinating in itself. Little by little, it began to trickle out. And as the 50s developed, an interest in the old music became more and more prevalent, to the point where by 1958, the entire folk music boom that was going on was about looking for old songs that people could sing. So it ended up becoming that Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music was a key source. It's almost like you had to have it because there was really no other way to really hear the old songs. They weren't available commercially. If you didn't already own the 78, you're not going to know it. And it wasn't like there was a market for it, or that there was, like today, you can find almost anything that you want. In 1952, you would have to find the record in order to know what it was about. And to do that, you probably had to buy Harry Smith's Anthology of Folk Music. And these albums were expensive in their time. I think if I remember correctly, I heard that they were going for something like $18. In 1955 money? Like, wow, that's a fortune. But it eventually caught on, and this is what eventually led to not just the whole folk thing, but eventually it bled into rock and roll. This is why Bob Dylan was right on that cusp of being the folk artist who was also watching things change. And as the future was moving toward rock and roll, why it was so radical when he did what he did. And all of that can be traced. If you're going to just do it literally, you cannot go any further back than Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music, because you get to the point where you are pre-recording. And so now there's nothing but written word about songs, which is what the child ballads were about. Back then, they were able to write down the words and maybe even some of the music and put it in a book, but you couldn't listen to it. Harry Smith changed that by pulling together these tracks and allowing people to hear them and listen to them. So now, songs that people didn't want to hear because they were 20 years old, now as I am talking to you, these songs are very close to being 100 years old. So it's that crazy. And I think we're going to have some fun. I think that you might even end up, maybe you recognize a song or two here or there. I think next week is going to be the case for that more than this week. But the first song we're going to play, which would be Harry Smith Numbers Everything. The box is cut into four separate sections, and volume one is called Ballads, which is to say songs that can be incredibly, stupendously sad or dark, really dark, and on occasion, funny. But they're what he calls ballads. And when we finish ballads, we'll be moving on to social music and then what he calls songs. Then there's a collection of blues that we'll get to later on in the series. But the first artist up is a man named Uncle Eck Dunford. Now, Dunford would play with a guy named Pop Stoneman, which is somebody we're going to be hearing in the not-too-distant future on this series. And they came from Galax, Virginia, which is an area that is still known by many old-time musicians and famous fiddlers, because there was a convention that they would hold there where all the old-timers would go. He was also well-known. Dunford, known for having a source of songs and a really strange way of tuning on his instrument. And he was also a bit of a character. He would dress in an overcoat and overshoes, even in the summer, sometimes wearing pink earmuffs and an ornamented hat while he performed. Bit of an odd guy. The song is, I find it a bit humorous. It's called Old Shoes and Leggins. And since Harry Smith makes a little comment, a snippet, I would say, to describe what the lyrics are about, most of them I find very entertaining. Here he writes about the lyrics, quote, "Mother hospitable, but girls find shoddy oldsters' actions perverse." Here's Old Shoes and Leggins by Uncle Eck Dunford.
A man that was old come courting one day, and the girls wouldn't have him. He come down the lane on a walking cane, with his daughter's shoes on and his leggings. My mother, she told me to give him a chair, for the girls wouldn't have him. I gave him a chair and he looked mighty queer, with his daughter's shoes on and his leggings. Mother, she told me to hang up his hat, for the girls wouldn't have him. I hung up his hat and he kicked the cat, with his old shoes on and his leggings. My mother, she told me to give him some meat, for the girls wouldn't have him. I gave him some meat, you know how he did eat, with his old shoes on and his leggings. Mother, she told me to give him the hoe, for the girls wouldn't have him. I gave him the hoe and he jumped Jim Crow, with his old shoes on and his leggings. My mother, she told me to give him the saw, for the girls wouldn't have him. I gave him the saw and he played rice straw, with his old shoes on and his leggings. Mother, she told me to put him to bed, for the girls wouldn't have him. I put him to bed and he stood on his head, with his old shoes on and his leggings. My mother, she told me to send him away, for the girls wouldn't have him. I sent him away and he left us to stay, with his old shoes on and his leggings.
That track was recorded in 19...
Willie Moore was a king.
Was what? Heidi, you aren't watching that board. That track was recorded in 1929, which makes it 98 years old. It just fascinates me. I just think that's fantastic to think that, you know, we literally are a century away from when most of these songs are recorded, and yet we can still find relevance from what they offered in music today. That I just love the idea of that. Now, this next song we're going to cover is even older than that. This song is 99 years old. So yeah, it was recorded in 1927. It's by a team under the name of Burnett and Rutherford. Now, Burnett lived to be up until the year 1977. Leonard Rutherford didn't last quite as long. He passed away in the 50s, although he was, I believe, considerably younger than Richard Burnett. Richard Burnett became a professional musician because he was blinded at about the age of something like 25 or something like that by a robber's gunshot. He was held up and the guy pulled the trigger and he ended up being blinded by it. And back in those days, like pretty much everybody said it, if you're blind, you better learn to play music. Like Doc Watson tells that story all the time, the guitar player, that it was his father who said, you know, listen, son, you know, it's going to be a tough road life for you if you don't learn to play an instrument. You got to play guitar. And look at Doc Watson became quite famous. There's a lot of famous blind people from the early 20th century. And Richard Burnett was one of them. Leonard Rutherford started playing with him when he was a teenager in around the year 1914. Burnett's mostly known for writing a song he called it Farewell Song, but it eventually got recorded by a bunch of other people, and the title changed to A Man of Constant Sorrow, which is a song that I'm sure you probably know or heard. And a movie too. There you go. So that all goes back to Richard Burnett. And again, like even earlier than when this song was recorded, like 15 years before that, when he wrote the song, he tells a story that he says he remembers when he was making chairs, even at the age of 90, for a Virginia furniture store owner. And he remembered that what he did when he was younger was actually making records for furniture companies, too. Because back then, in those days, it was the furniture companies where you would buy your chairs and your tables. They were the people that would be selling record players because they were made out of wood and they were considered a furniture item. So the furniture stores would try to find people to record songs so that they could sell records that they could sell with the record players that they were selling in the furniture stores. So Columbia ended up getting involved in a lot of that, Columbia Records. Well, anyway, with all that history, here is Burnett and Rutherford. The song is entitled Willie Moore. And again, the phrasing that, or the explanation that Harry Smith provides for the lyrics is this: Annie under grassy mound after parents Nick's marriage to King, death probably self-inflicted. So this is one of those incredibly sad and dark songs. Willie Moore.
Willie Moore was a king, he's age 21. He courted a damsel fair. Her eyes were as bright as a diamond after night, and a wavy black was her hair. He courted her both night and day, till a Mary they did agree. But when he came to get her parents' consent, they said it could never be. She threw herself in Willie Moore's arms, as all time had done before. But little did he think when they parted that night, sweet Anna, he would see no more. It was about the 10th of May, the time I remember well. That very same night her body disappeared in the way no tongue could tell. Sweet Annie was loved far and near, had friends most all around. In the little brook before the cottage door, the body of sweet Anna was found. She was taken by her weeping friends and carried to her parents' room. And there she was dressed in a shroud of snowy white and laid in a lowly tomb. Parents now were left alone. oven weed. And in a grassy mound before the cottage door, the body of Sweet Anna still sleeps. Composed in the flowery west by a man you may never have seen. Oh, I tell you his name, but it is not in full. His initials are J.R.D.
That's Willie Moore by Burnett and Rutherford. The next track we're going to cover, it's actually downright, it's almost contemporary by standards here. It was recorded in 1930. Ooh, only 96 years old. And it's credited to Buster Carter and Preston Young. According to Harry Smith, he was able to determine that the song dated back to probably the middle of the 19th century. It's another reason why this is so great. People like in the Appalachian area, and in this instance, Piedmont, North Carolina, is where Buster Carter and Preston Young were from, where they had a lot of string bands there. And them playing these songs that they had heard probably coming, bringing with them from Europe, just gave them a new life when the recording industry started and salvaged all of this. It's pretty amazing. So the track is called A Lazy Farmer Boy, and the little synopsis put up by Harry Smith is this. Young agriculturist neglects seed, loses both crop and fiancé. A Lazy Farmer Boy.
I will sing a little song, but it ain't very long, about a lazy farmer wouldn't hoe his corn. And why it was I never could tell, for that young man was always well. That young man was always well. Planted his corn on June the last. In July it was up to his eye. In September there came a big frost, and all that young man's corn was lost. All that young man's corn was lost. Started to the field and he got that last. The grass and the weeds was up to his chin. The grass and the weeds had grown so high. Called that poor man for to sigh. Called that poor man for to sigh. His cold ship had just begun, saying, young man, have you hold your corn? I've tried in vain, but I don't believe I'll raise one grain. Don't believe I'll raise one grain. Why do you come to me to wed if you can't raise your own cornbread? Single I am and will remain, for lazy man I won't maintain. Lazy man I won't maintain. Hung his head and walked away, saying, kind miss, you rue the day. You rue the day that you was born. For give me the devil, cause I wouldn't home a call. Give me the devil, cause I wouldn't home a call. His cold ship was to an end. On his way he then began, saying, kind miss, I'll have another girl if I have to ramble this big wide world. If I have to ramble this big wide world.
before we get to the half hour. The next track is actually a pretty fun song. The artist is the Carolina Tar Heels, which is sort of a superstar group, if you can imagine that, from Appalachia, consisting of Clarence Tom Ashley on vocals and guitar. Doc Walsh played banjo, and a guy named Garley Foster was also a guitar player and a singer. They were unusual in the fact that they were a string band, but they didn't have a fiddle player in its time, which was a bit unusual. Doc Walsh was considered the banjo king of the Carolinas, and Garley Foster got a reputation, a nickname as the human bird, because he would often do bird imitations in the middle of their show. They tried to, they were doing their best to, like, basically be entertaining with what they were doing in their time. Now, this track is from 1928, I believe. It's called Peg and All, and which is another shoe song, which we started the show with old shoes and leggings. Well, Peg and All is more or less about how the shoe industry was getting busted. In fact, again, the synopsis by Harry Smith says it all. Technological unemployment hits shoe industry in the year of 1804. Bad time to be making shoes, I guess, by hand in 1804. But here's Peg and All by the Carolina Tar Heels. Dig that song. Peg and All, as in AWL, an old piece of equipment that you would need if you were going to be building your own shoe. I think it's like a form that you put everything around when you're going to sew the leather bits together. Not relevant anymore by the year of 1804, apparently. And next up is another one of those incredibly dark songs that fall into the ballad section. Song is called Ami Wise. The artist is, I got to mention right now, as I can think of it, you're listening to How Music Changed on WHPC, WHPC HD Garden City. And I'm Tom Ryan with my lovely wife, Heidi Morales Ryan. And today we are together going through songs from the Anthology of American Folk Music. All right then, so as I was saying, the track is called Ami Wise. It's by G.B. Grayson. Grayson was a fiddler on East Tennessee, kind of near the North Carolina border. He was another person who was blinded, this time as when he was a child, a very young child. So he ended up taking up a career as a musician. It was a very common thing to do if you were a blind person back in those days. He would often play with a partner named Henry Whittier. And together, they're responsible for a couple of songs that became relatively big hits in the 30s. Songs like Train 45 and Handsome Molly. But you might recognize that they were also the first ones to record a song called Tom Dooley. Now, there's a song that actually got so entrenched into the folk thing of the 1950s that it makes this connection of quite literally direct from 1930 to 1958. Because I remember the Kingston Trio had a very big hit with doing a version of one of G.B. Grayson and Tom Whittier's, Henry Whittier's songs. Anyway, this track, as I said, is called Ami Wise. And the description in Harry Smith's words actually says, there is a Naomi Wise that was drowned by her sweetheart, Jonathan Lewis, in Deep River, 1808. And her grave can still be seen nearby at a Providence church in North Carolina. The summary is, greedy girl goes to Adams Spring with lyre, lives just long enough to regret it. Here's Ami Wise.
Ami Wise, how she was deluded by John Lewis's lies. He told her to meet him at Adams's Spring. He'd bring her some money and some other fine things. He brought her no money nor no other fine things. But get up behind me, Ami, to Squire Ellis we'll go. She got up behind him, so carefully we'll go. They rode till they came where deep waters did flow. John Lewis, he concluded to tell her his mind. John Lewis, he concluded to leave her behind. Spare me my life, and I'll go distracted and never be your wife. He threw her arms from round him and into the water she plunged. John Lewis, he turned round and rode back to Adams's hall. He went inquiring for Ami, but Ami, she is not here. She's gone to some neighbor's house and won't be gone very long. John John Lewis was took a prisoner and locked up in the jail. Was locked up in the jail around, was there to remain a while. John Lewis, he stayed there for 6 months or maybe more. Until he broke jail, into the army he did go.
That's Army Wise by G.B. Grayson, excuse me. All right, the next track is a little bit more lighthearted. I think I said anything would be a little bit more lighthearted than that. It's by Kelly Harrell and the Virginia String Band. What's unusual about Kelly Harrell is that is famous as a singer, but never played an instrument, which was sort of a problem for like the people who were recording him because they felt that it was costing too much money to hire a band for him every time he wanted to make a recording. So that if you played an instrument, you wouldn't have to be paying all of these musicians. But he just never did. Just never did learn to. This track dates way back again to 1927. It was recorded in Camden, New Jersey. I think a lot of these songs probably were. There was a recording studio there where a lot of like the major labels would actually go there, and non-major labels recording in Camden at that time. But the synopsis given here, but this basically, well, it's allegedly a humorous composition. And according to Harry Smith, his synopsis reads, "Ditch digger shocked by employment agent's grotesque deceptions." Let's see what he means by that. It's called "My Name is John Johanna."
My name is John Johanna. I came from Buffalo Town. For 9 long years I've traveled this wide, wide world around. Through ups and downs and miseries, and some good days I saw. But I never knew what misery was till I went to Arkansas. I went up to the station, the operator stood by. Told him my situation and where I wanted to ride. Says, "Hand me down $5, let a ticket you shall draw. That'll land you safely railway in the state of Arkansas." I rode up to the station, the chance to meet a friend. Alan Catcher was his name, although they called him Kane. His hair hung down in red tails below his underjaw. He said he run the best hotel in the state of Arkansas. I followed my companion to his respected place. Saw pity and starvation was pictured on his face. His bread was old corn dodgers, his beef I could not chaw. He charged me 50 cents a day in the state of Arkansas. I got up that next morning to catch that early train. He said, "Don't be in a hurry, lad, I have some land to drain. You'll get your 50 cents a day and all that you can show. You'll find yourself a different lad when you leave old Arkansas." I worked 6 weeks for the son of a gun, Alan Catcher was his name. He stood 7 feet 2 inches, as tall as any crane. I got so thin on San Fexy I could hide behind a straw. You bet I was a different lad when I left old Arkansas. Farewell, you old swamp rabbits, also you Dodger pills. Likewise, you walking skeletons, you old setback heels. If you ever see my face again, I'll hand you down my paw. I'll be looking through a telescope from home to Arkansas.
is called My Name is John Johanna by Kelly Harrell and the Virginia String Band, which consisted, by the way, of one violinist, a banjo player, and two guitar players. All right, the next song coming up is by a singing cowboy by the name of Edward L. Crane. The song is called Bandit Cole Younger. And taking from the notes that Harry Smith wrote, Cole Younger was a Missourian who rode with Quantrell's guerrillas and became a captain in Shelby's Missouri cavalry toward the end of the Civil War. He and his brothers turned outlaw, though, and robbed trains and banks with the James Boys. Captured while trying to loot a bank in Northfield, Minnesota in 1876, Cole was sent to prison for murder. What you might not have known in that story, if you knew the rest of the part about him robbing trains, was that he was pardoned in 1901. So the artist, the singing cowboy's name is Edward L. Crane, and the track is entitled Bandit Cole Younger.
I am a noted highwayman, Cole Younger is my name. With deeds and desperation that brought my name to shame. Robbing of the Northfield Bank is a thing I'll never deny, but which I will be sorry of until the day I die. We started for old Texas, that grand old Lone Star State. Was there on the Brasket Prairies, the James Boys we did meet. With knives, gun, and revolvers, we all sit down to play a game of good old poker to pass the time away. Across the Brasket Prairies, a Denver train we spied. I says to Bob, we'll rob her as she goes rolling by. Saddled up our horses, northwestward we did go, to the godforsaken country called Minnesota. I had my eye on the Northfield Bank when Brother Bob did say, Cole, if you undertake the job, you'll always curse the day. We stationed out our pickets, up to the bank did go. Was there up on the counter, boys, we struck our fatal blow. Saying, hand us out your money, sir, and make no long delay. We are the noted younger boys, and spend no time in play. Cashier being as true as steel refuses a noted ban. Was Jesse James that pulled a trigger that killed this noble man? We run for life, for death was near 400 on our trail. We soon was overtaken and landed safe in jail. Stillwater jail we lay, a-wearing our lives away. Two James boys left to tell a tale of the sad and fatal day.
Yes, so how many movies are there about the James boys and the younger boys? It's just so many. And most of them are really good, the ones that I've seen. Great cowboy movies. All right, the next track we're going to cover. You know, one thing that happened a lot was that a lot of the recordings that were happening in the early part of the 20th century were songs that were actually presented as news, almost as like, instead of like having to like maybe buy a newspaper, you could buy a record and find out information about history. There were lots of songs about Charles Lindbergh and, you know, every trains, you know, train disasters, the Casey Jones, for example, which we will be playing next week, ship disasters, sinking of the Titanic and others. It was a common thing. This track we're going to play is by Kelly Harrell and the Virginia String Band. And we just talked about the Virginia String Band and Kelly Harrell two songs ago when we played My Name is John Johanna. So this is the exact same act again. That My Name is John Johanna was recorded in 27. This song was recorded on the exact same day, March 23rd, 1927. So how about that? The song title is Charles Guiteau. And the story there is that James Garfield, the 20th president of the United States, was shot on July 2nd, 1881, in a Washington railway station by a disappointed office seeker named Charles J. Guiteau. According to some people, they say that this song is alleged to be the work of Guiteau himself. He wrote the song about himself when he would sing it to visitors in his death cell. Hard to say. So the synopsis given by Harry Smith, assassin of President Garfield recalls exploit in scaffold preparation.
Christians, wherever you may be, and likewise pay attention from these two lines for me. I was down at the depot to make my getaway, and Providence being against me, it proved to be too late. I tried to play off insane, but found it would not do. The people all against me, it proved to make no show. Judge Garfield passed the sentence, the clerk he wrote it down. On the 30th day of June to die I was condemned. My name is Charles Guiteau, my name I'll never deny. To leave my aged parents to sorrow and to die. But little did I think, while in my youthful bloom, I'd be carried to the scaffold to meet my fatal doom. My sister came in prison to bid her last farewell. She threw her arms around me, she wept most bitterly. She said, my loving brother, today you must die for the murder of James A. Garfield upon the scaffold high. My name is Charles Guiteau, my name I'll never deny, to leave my aged parents to sorrow and to die. But little did I think, while in my youthful bloom, I'd be carried to the scaffold to meet my fatal doom. Waiting, it's a quarter after two. The black gas is o'er my face, no longer can I see. But when I'm dead and buried, dear Lord, remember me. My name is Charles Guiteau, my name I'll never deny, to leave my aged parents in sorrow and to die. But little did I think, while in my youthful bloom, I'd carry to the scaffold to meet my fatal doom.
Charles Guiteau is the name of the song by Kelly Harrell and the Virginia String Band. We heard them twice today. Next up is not only a band that I'm sure you've heard of, but the song itself. It's the Carter Family. We did an entire series on the Carter Family in this How Music Changed series. If you're interested in hearing that, please go to our website, AmericanHitNetwork.com, and you can hear a series of shows dedicated exclusively to the music of the Carter Family. Now, the Carter Family consisted of A.P. Carter, Alvin Pleasant, Maybelle Carter, and Sarah. AP was unusual in that what he would do is he would like travel all around the Appalachian region, find songs that were folks, just like this stuff, folk songs that he would hear other people play, but he would take them and write them down and get them copyrighted in his own name. So he could then have them prepared for, that he could sell the songs at the shows. So that would be how that would work. Of course, it was Maybelle who would do most of the singing, and Sarah was the guitar player of the group. The song is John Hardy Was a Desperate Little Man. Now, you probably know the song, but the story is very interesting. There's no absolutely authentic information is available on John Hardy, except the order of execution on file in the courthouse. State of West Virginia versus John Hardy, felony. This day came again, the state by her attorney and the prisoner who stands convicted of murder in the first degree. The prisoner saying nothing why such sentence should not be passed. It is therefore considered by the court that the prisoner, John Hardy, is guilty, and that the said John Hardy will be hanged by the neck until dead on Friday, the 19th day of January, 1894. Witnesses of the trial state that Hardy worked for the Shawnee Coal Company, and one payday night, he killed a man in a crap game over 25 cents. It was his performers are the Carter family, and the song is John Hardy Was a Desperate Little Man. Just to cover the genius of Harry Smith, if you were paying attention, you might notice that the past three songs that I played were about real, true, living people, Cole Younger, Charles Guiteau, and John Hardy. Now, the last song is also one. We go from John Hardy to John Henry. The song is called Gonna Die With My Hammer In My Hand, which is a true story by the Williamson Brothers and Curry. Take care, folks. We'll see you next week.
me.
Lord, no.
I'm going to be the last of me.
Driving man.